supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Dan Gottlieb. Thanks for listening to Voices in the Family. Sigmund Freud once said that a happy person never has fantasies, only a dissatisfied one. Well, modern research shows that Uncle Siggy was wrong about that, too. About 95% of all people have sexual fantasies. They are more than normal, and they can actually improve your sex life. But how do they affect intimate relationships? Can you start a conversation with your partner about fantasies, or should you? Some fantasies, too, are intrusive, harmful, and become obsessions. On today's show, we'll find out why many people are afraid to talk about their fantasies and feel guilty about having them. My guests are Wendy Maltz and Dr. Sabita Pillai Friedman. Maltz is a sex therapist and marriage therapist. She's written several books, among them Private Thoughts. She hosts the website www.healthysex.com. Dr. Pillai Friedman is a psychotherapist at the Center for Relationships in Wynwood, Pennsylvania, and practices at the Institute for Sex Therapy. And that's at Graduate Hospital, yes, Sabita?
Yes, at Council for Relationships, beyond an umbrella.
Well, welcome to the show to both of you. So let me start with you, Sabita. What are sexual fantasies?
Well, sexual fantasies are harmless mental images of things that turn us on, that things that create sexual energy in us. So these sexual fantasies maintain sexual desire. So when I am encountered with people who suffer from low desire, one of the first questions I ask them is, do you have sexual fantasies? Because that is one of the first diagnostic questions. If they are not having sexual fantasies by themselves or that involves their partners, then there is a very big problem that needs to be diagnosed and treated.
Where do they come from? When do they start?
Sexual fantasies start at a very early age, and it is like a tapestry of images, sensual touches from parents, from information that they're getting through their peer group, media. So it's a tapestry of images and memories and sensual messages they've received over their entire lifetime.
One detail. You said it can begin with sensual touches.
Yes.
From parents. So
yes.
What does... You're talking about a very young child.
Yes, very young children are collecting these sensual body messages as they're experiencing the goodnight kiss, the hugs, the normal sensual hugs are all essential part of the sexual fantasy.
So they wouldn't have sexual fantasies the way an average person would define sexual fantasies, or would they?
They would. These are all normal part of the sexual fantasy, so they all form the fabric of our sexual fantasies.
Back to Freud.
Yes.
And Oedipus. Wendy? Do we have you? We've got a problem with Wendy's phone. We'll have her on in just a minute. So, are fantasies also a backlog of our experiences?
Yes, it can be a backlog of all our sensual and sexual experiences of our entire life. So, our fantasies can come from different corners of our experience throughout our child and adult life.
Can they be imposed, our fantasy, from others? For example, beer commercials, billboards, Victoria's Secret commercials.
These are all threads of our fantasy tapestry. The media plays a very big role in imposing images of fantasy on our youngsters and on our adults.
Wendy, do we have you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Can hear you very well. Welcome to the show.
Great.
We were talking about where sexual fantasies come from, and I was asking Sabita about the relationship between our fantasies and the larger culture. It's almost as though commercials are telling us what our sexual fantasies should be. Are they doing that, or are they reflecting what our sexual fantasies really are? And specifically, I was wondering, I was driving to the airport last week, and I saw a billboard for a men's club, a strip club, and the woman who they advertised, I trust she was over 18, but she didn't look over 18. And, you know, does that reflect an accurate fantasy, or are they suggesting fantasies we ought to have?
Well, I think our media plays a big role in suggesting fantasies, not necessarily intentionally, but sexual fantasy has become a very big commercial industry with things like strip clubs and pornography and even romance novels. So there's a lot of shaping of our sexual thoughts. But the process of sexual fantasizing is very natural and normal and does start early. And it's very similar to dreaming. It's part of our subconscious, unconscious experience, and it can reflect different conflicts we have as well as desires. So it's very broad range. Like with our dreaming, we have things from nightmares to like the most wonderful dream you could imagine. You know, you wake up from and go, oh wow, I really did that. And our sexual fantasies can be like that too. And our dreams are shaped by our culture, and similarly our fantasies.
There's one difference that I see between nighttime dreams and sexual fantasies is nighttime dreams rarely cause us anxiety or shame or fear, or nighttime dreams, are we rarely compelled to act them out? So what's the difference?
I think that is a difference there, although sometimes nighttime dreams can cause us a lot of problems. You wake up, you know, and you just murdered somebody, and you go, oh my gosh, you know, why'd I do that?
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of subconscious aspects to our sexual fantasies. We tend to blame ourselves and shame ourselves for our sexual fantasies in ways we don't do our dreams. Mm-hmm. And we take them very literally. But I think there's a lot of unconscious material there that can be looked at, much like we do when we analyze our dreams. It's just a rich area for giving us information about ourselves.
Well, how so? Give us an example of how you would find the unconscious message or information in a sexual fantasy.
Well, let's see. If you are, let's say you're imagining having a sexual interaction with your favorite movie star, okay? Part of that can be a desire to feel that your sexuality is powerful enough that Angelina Jolie would want to have sex with you, or Brad Pitt if you're a woman, you know. And it's kind of like it can help compensate for feelings of low self-esteem or not feeling attractive or just wanting to kind of boost our sense of our sexual powers.
I get it. So the fact that I don't have fantasies about Angela Jolie means that I'm pretty confident that she would want to have sex with me.
It could go either way, I guess. You could fantasize you were with her and she was having the best time of her life, you know.
Let me reintroduce the topic. We're talking about sexual fantasies, where they come from, what they mean, how they can help, and we're going to talk later about how they can hurt. My guests are Wendy Maltz on the telephone and Dr. Sabita Pillai-Friedman. And our phone number is 888-477-9499. Again, that's 1-888-477-9499. Sabita, do you have a sense of how fantasies change over a lifetime?
It can change if we liberate our minds to bring in to really allow our fantasies to develop. Over time, if we can say to ourselves, it is normal and healthy to fantasize, and I'm going to use it to enhance my sexuality, you can really expand your sexual fantasies and use it to your advantage in your relationship.
Wendy, does a 70-year-old person have different fantasies than a 30-year-old?
Well, I think we tend to hold on to certain themes. Like if you like, a fierceness or a conflict in a sexual fantasy scenario, you might still enjoy that when you get older. But our fantasies tend to change as we get older with new life experiences. So if you ask somebody who's a virgin what their sexual fantasy is, it won't be as explicit and detailed as somebody who's been making love for 20 years.
Well, that brings up another question. When you say explicit or detailed, let's talk about men's fantasies versus women's fantasies. Mm-hmm. I would imagine men's are more detailed. Wendy?
Yeah, men's tend to be more graphic and visual and focusing on body parts and positions and sex acts and doing to someone else, whereas women's tend to be being done to and being focused more on the relationship dynamics and sensory aspects. But some of this is changing because I think there's kind of been a debate in the field whether that is because of the influence of the culture, because males watch a lot more pornography, and so their sexual fantasies are getting shaped by visual imagery, or if it has something to do with gender differences. It may be, I suspect, a little of both, because there is some research that shows that looking at pictures of people making love can increase testosterone levels.
And I would imagine it is also the testosterone that would attract men to pornography, where women wouldn't necessarily.
It could not. I mean, pornography is so degrading to women in general and exploitive of women. A lot of women are turned off to it because of that. At least the kind of standard hardcore pornography.
Right. Sabita?
Wendy, do you also believe that men are socialized to normalize material like porn and Playboy? I remember one of my clients told me that when he turned 16, his father got him a subscription for Playboy magazine. And I cannot imagine any parent would do that for a daughter. But this sort of behavior is normalized when we're dealing with boys. So boys are, to some degree, socialized to enjoy porn and Playboy.
They're socialized to think it's a manly thing to do.
Exactly.
But, you know, after researching sexual fantasies, I feel that it's actually something kind of sad going on here, which is a channeling of male sexual erotic imagination into a desire for a commercial product.
Yes. You're talking about pornography specifically. Is there any time when pornography can be of value?
I think there's a time when erotic images can be of value in general for inspiration and reading material as well as visual images. But when you're looking at the kind of standard hardcore pornography that's being sold out there now, it really does tend to create a lot of problems for people who want to be in healthy love relationships, because it's used as a sexual outlet itself, and so it competes with the present-day partner.
Interesting.
And it also is a very loveless, it presents a very loveless type of sex. Mm-hmm. So a person who is raised on pornography can end up not knowing how to integrate feelings from the heart, intimacy and real caring in with their sexual response.
I would suggest also, everything you're saying makes sense, but I feel that almost the same way about the softcore pornography we see coming out of movies coming out of Hollywood in most movies. It doesn't show graphic sex, but it really often shows it without love, without relationship, without real intimacy, just sexual passion.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a certain kind of porn that I think is very useful in treating sexual dysfunction. And also helping couples enhance their sexuality. I use, soft porn, it's kind of in between soft porn and hard porn. This is made by a porn star turned producer, Candida Royale, and her website is www.femproductions.com. And her DVDs and videos are often kind of in between erotica and hard porn, and the women are treated with respect. And it also assures women experiencing pleasure, which is not something you see in most hardcore porn. You see women as objects, and the men are the ones who are experiencing the pleasure. So I usually recommend those videos to my couples.
I want to make an observation and ask you both to comment before our break. Usually it's 20 minutes after the show, and we've publicized what the show is going to be about all week, sexual fantasies. I know there's lots of people out there listening to this show.
I'm sure.
And nobody's called in yet, which is pretty unusual. So The question is, what's the deal here with shame or embarrassment? Very few people talking openly about their sexual fantasies.
I do think a lot of people have a lot of shame about their sexual fantasies. They are our most private thoughts. And we're not used to talking about them. I think we should talk about them more, and I like breaking the ice on this subject because by talking about them and discussing problems that we're having, that different people are having with them, we can learn from each other. That was the motivation for writing the book Private Thoughts that I did, because women's sexual fantasies were just not talked about, and a lot of women had concerns about them and unnecessarily felt a lot of shame and just through their own ignorance were in a lot of guilt.
I just want to make an observation, speaking of your book, and then I'll turn to Sabita on the shame issue. In my research for this show our production team's research, most of what's been written about sexual fantasies, most of the experts about sexual fantasies are women. So What's up with that? Because I know guys, when we're not in mixed company, talk about it quite openly.
No, well, actually, it's most of the research was done by men on males.
Okay.
The body of the research. And, study that Susie Boss and I did for our book, that was pretty groundbreaking, actually.
So I'm happy.
Nancy Friday came out with books on women's sexual fantasies back in the 70s, but in terms of the academic research, it's been more on males.
Let's come back to the issue of shame. What's your take on shame, Sabita?
Well, shame about our sexuality comes from our sexual scripts. When we are, the kind of sexual scripts are messages, covert or overt, that we get from our family, our school environment, from religious leaders, from peer group, from media. So these messages can really affect the way we view sexuality. One person I was working with told me that his mother would put him to bed and say, "No dirty behavior." So she was referring to masturbation. And so by overtly saying no dirty behavior, she was basically saying sex is dirty. And there could be also some covert messages that parents can give their children. They can say, for instance, when the child comes to ask a question about sexuality, where do babies come from? The mother may make a look of disgust, or the father may shrug and turn away and ignore the question. So these are covert ways to also convey a sense of shame about sexuality. So its origin could be from the family environment, but the shame can get carried into adulthood through other sexual experiences they have as well.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we are talking about sexual fantasies, where they come from, what they're about, what we can learn, how can we use them to help our relationships, and what happens when sometimes they're intrusive and cause difficulty in our lives. Our number is 1-888-477-9. 9499. Tell us your experience about sexual fantasies. Do you use them in relationships, or are you fearful to use them? Again, the number is 888-477-9499. My guests are Wendy Maltz and Dr. Sabita Pillai-Friedman. Maltz is a sex therapist and a marital therapist. She's written several books, among them Private Thoughts, and she hosts the website healthysex.com. Dr. Pillai-Friedman is a psychotherapist at the Center for
Relationships. Council for Relationships.
Yeah, I've got sex in my brain today.
Yes.
And I'm supposed to, I guess. And it's at Wynwood, Pennsylvania. She practices at the Institute for Sex Therapy. And I must say that over the last 30 seconds, all of our lines are now lit up. So
great.
I'm looking forward to coming back after our break. Well, I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
The Depression Research Unit of the University of Pennsylvania Medical Center supports WHYY. Penn's DRU is conducting research into alternative herbal treatments of anxiety. Symptoms may include nervousness, tension, sleep problems, and concentration difficulty. Those who qualify will receive an initial evaluation and may take part in a research study with chamomile or black cohosh for up to 3 months. For details, 215-662-3462.
Hi. This is Carrie Hanlon, Chief Marketing Officer of WHYY. We're grateful for your patience as we continue our fundraising today. Member support truly is the lifeblood of our organization. Help us provide the quality programming you love. We need for you to call 888-345-9499 or online at whyy.org. WHYY is radio worth your time and your support.
Sexual fantasies is what we're talking about today on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. My guests are Dr. Sabita Pillai-Friedman and Wendy Maltz. Friedman is a sex therapist and a marital therapist with the Center for Relationships in Wynwood. Maltz is also a sex therapist. She's written Private Thoughts, and she hosts the website healthysex.com. Well, like I said before the break, we did get lots and lots of calls. Before we get to them, let me start with you, Wendy. Is there such a thing as typical fantasies for men and women? More common ones than others?
Yeah, I think there are more common ones. A very common one for women is seeing themselves as the object of desire. I called it the pretty maiden fantasy in the book, Private Thoughts. But it has to do with you're just there, and you're sought after, and you're hungered for, and you're seen as attractive, and you're kind of swept off your feet by the lover of your choice, who makes love wonderfully in all the ways you want. And so that's very common for women. I think men like to see themselves in terms of having sexual prowess, as well as not as having a very ready, willing, and enthusiastic partner. I think men have do a lot of knocking on doors when it comes to sex, and so the idea that they often fear rejection, of course, and they often are rejected. And the idea that there is a female out there who just wants sex as badly as they want to give it, and wants them in particular and is satisfied by them, that's very attractive to a lot of men.
That's interesting, the rejection theme. And I know it is common with almost every couple I've treated about men feeling rejected and feeling hurt around, and sometimes not even knowing it. That's one of the differences between human males and non-human male animals. I mean, non-human male animals get rejected, but they don't seem to be hurt or, hold feelings about it.
Take it that personally, yeah.
Yeah, yes. Mm-hmm. An ego's not all it's cracked up to be, I think. Let's go to the phones. We've got Jason on the line. Jason, hi, you're on Voices.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thanks. What can we do?
Go on. I shared my dilemma with the screener that I'm a newlywed, and while my wife and I have a very healthy sexual relationship, I found myself having an increased number of dreams and sexual fantasies, not always about her.
And why do you call that a dilemma?
I don't know what else to call it, for lack of a better term.
Well, which suggests you're uncomfortable with it.
I wouldn't say so, though.
All right. So why did you call it a dilemma? Why didn't you call it an interesting development or an asset or something mm-hmm. wonderful that's happening inside your brain?
Well, just like I said, lack of an adjective to put in there. So I'm very attracted to my wife. Again, our relationship is fine, but inadvertently sometimes I will find myself dreaming about miscellaneous women.
Is that okay with you?
Since I'm not doing anything to elicit the dreams, yes, it's fine with me.
Are you afraid of what it means?
Honestly, I don't know what it means.
Okay. Well, you called the right number. let's start with you, Sabita. So what might it mean for Jason that he's
Well, it just means he's a healthy human being, having healthy fantasies. You are allowed to fantasize about other people as long as you do not act on it. There's nothing wrong with it. And you do not have to share all your fantasies with your partner because it can cause problems. So you're allowed to have your own fantasies to enhance your sexuality. Just be faithful and trustworthy in the relationship.
Hmm. Let me turn to you, Wendy. I would imagine your feelings are about the same.
Very similar. I think one of the functions of sexual fantasy is to expand our experience, allow us to, it's kind of like a steam valve. So, you know, we're living in a culture where monogamy is the name of the game. I mean, that's what we seek because we want meaningful, long-lasting relationships, and monogamy is important for those. But it's not unusual to have sexual thoughts and feelings for other people.
And monogamy might not be consistent with our primordial brain anyway.
Mm-hmm. It may not be because in the past, males lost different female partners. Women died in childbirth more and things like that. And needed to be able to be turned on to other we both sexes needed to be able to possibly mate with a number of different, have a number of different mates. So sexual fantasies, it's kind of like a steam valve going off. We can kind of imagine these interactions with other people, or they just pop up. Mm-hmm. But I think the important thing is to not take it literally, not take it to mean it's a sign that you really want to have sex with another woman or that you should have sex with another woman.
It's not a sign of anything necessarily.
No, sexual fantasies have been called polymorphous. Libidinal thought.
Well, let me ask you this.
Many shaped sexual thoughts.
let me ask you this. Jason, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Because when I was first married, same thing happened, that I began having a lot of fantasies about, and many about other women, and probably because my juices were flowing for the first time in my life, but I felt I had the same question Jason did, and then I had a dilemma. I figured if I shared it with my wife, she would be hurt and anxious, but if I didn't share it with her, I'm afraid I'm withholding something from her, and I felt like I was being dishonest. I don't know if Jason feels any of those feelings.
No, I never had that feeling.
All right, well,
you're better off
than I was.
Well, in my relationship, we are very open. I think that's part of it. You need to be open and honest, but at the same time, she has things that are her, like, for example, I'm a motorcyclist, she's not. So I have my activities that are mine and my own. And this is a situation I just didn't feel the need to share with her. Again, I wasn't trying to do anything to elicit the dreams. I wasn't thinking about cheating.
How do you feel about what you've heard?
Oh, I feel fine, actually, and I appreciate the clarity. Because, again, I didn't know where it was coming from. I didn't have any negative feelings about it. But it's always good to get a perspective.
Yeah. All right. Thanks so much for your call.
Thank you.
So what would you... Wendy, what would mm-hmm. you have advised Dan Gottlieb 30 years ago or 25 years ago?
Well, I would have thought it might be a good idea that you and your wife learn more about sexual fantasies So it is a subject that you can talk about together to learn such things that it doesn't mean it, to not take them literally and to or as a sign that something different should happen in terms of sexual behavior. And just kind of see it as kind of what Sabina was saying earlier of that when we have sexual fantasies about other people, it can be a sign that we're just really, we're sexually alive. We're here. Yes. We're feeling, you know. And it's kind of like direct that energy towards your partner. And another thing I think can be really neat is when you see your partner, like when you see your wife as representative of all women, that there are aspects to her that are the different women you might fantasize about. There's something about her that is woven, that you can weave in with these aspects of other women. And so we see our one particular mate as being kind of the repository or the icon for the whole gender.
Do either of you know how often the percentage of people who act out their fantasies? I guess that would be hard to research. I would imagine a small number.
You know, sexual fantasies act more, as Wendy said, as a safety valve. So you really, when you're fantasizing, you're allowed to fantasize, you're allowed to talk about it in the relationship, it really serves as a safety valve, so you do not feel the need to act on fantasies.
Let's go back to the phone. We've got Jacob on the line. Jacob?
Hi.
Hi.
My question is there a sex is seen kind of as a naughty thing, especially when it comes to pornography and stuff like that. You kind of wonder, where is an addiction really an addiction? You guys are talking about pornography very openly. But should there be more communication as far as sex is concerned? But it's a very, you know, don't talk about that type of thing. So,
what do you mean?
Sex is something that you don't just go around. I mean, lots of problems can relate from some type of sexual tension. So I wonder if we talked about it more. I mean, even beyond just our partners. I mean, that sounds kind of weird. But, and so you got pornography, and people could be obviously, quote-unquote, addicted. They can never communicate something like that because it's too, I mean, they could be shunned.
Right, I get it. I wrote an article about pedophilia a few months ago and suggested that it would be acted out less if people who had those troubling fantasies were able to talk about it and be open.
Exactly.
Thanks for your call, Jacob. We'll hear our experts' reaction. Sabina, what are your thoughts about
it? I absolutely believe there should be more openness and communication about sexuality. I think it should begin with parents and children. It should go on to comprehensive sex education in schools, to, you know, more healthy dissemination of information on sexuality. So it should occur on all levels.
What would that look like? Let me turn to you, Wendy. What would that look like if you reached the ideal with communication and it was open in schools and in public? What would it look like, sound like?
Just like we, you know, we kind of learn how to drive well. We learn what rules that there are, what works best with driving, how to be a safe driver, you know, learning things about how to be a sexual person in a healthy way, where you value things like consent and equality and respect and trust and safety. And you learn how to integrate feelings from the heart, actually have your sexual energy, your sexual arousal start in your heart rather than from something you're external that's coming in through your eyes or from just a genital feeling.
I want to talk about that too, the fantasies that are not coming from the heart. Some people, and you've talked about this, Wendy, fantasize about things they're afraid of.
When people have had backgrounds where they've been traumatized and hurt sexually, they can have sexual fantasies that are recreations of that. and they can be some very disturbing themes of being raped or violated or hurting someone else sexually. So we can tie in with our, just like with our dreams, we can tie in different unresolved emotional conflicts, angers we have, feelings of betrayal, humiliation, and abandonment. And themes like that can come up in our sexual fantasies without us even being consciously aware of it. And sometimes those fantasies can be some of the hardest to get rid of and the most sort of ingrained until they're understood.
How does one do it?
Just like we analyze dreams, you can sit down, you can write out your sexual fantasy, you can look for themes, you can look at the different characters. Sometimes if I'm doing counseling work, I might ask someone if I can talk to a character in their fantasy. Like there was a woman who fantasized about being raped by Nazi cadets. And I asked her, and this was in a sexual fantasy workshop, I asked her if I could talk with one of the cadets. And I kind of, you know, I interviewed him like you might on a radio show, mm-hmm. you know. So tell me, how did you come to be a rapist, you know? Do you have a mother? Do you have sisters? How do you feel about them? You know, and just kind of this sort of like, you know, we have this incredible fear of our sexual fantasies a lot. But we can shine a light on them if we're not afraid, and we can just go, wow, what an incredible opportunity to understand ourselves better by exploring them.
So you diminish the shame and fear by humanizing it.
Yeah, and you go, you would not be sexually fantasizing this unless it had some kind of meaning for you. So let's work together to understand what that meaning is. So you can benefit from it and not have to feel all that shame. Not that you'd necessarily keep that fantasy going, but you can change the fantasy into something that's more attractive.
Well, one of the things it does when you humanize it and diminish the shame about it is, you know, it takes the fire out of it. It takes the heat mm-hmm. and intensity, and the locus of control shifts more.
Yeah.
Let's take a break and come back. We've got lots of callers, and I want to hear what they have to say. My guests are Wendy Maltz and Dr. Sabita Pillai-Friedman. Maltz is a sex therapist. She's written many books, including Private Thoughts. Her website is healthysex.com. Dr. Pillai-Friedman is a psychotherapist at the Center for Relationships in Wynwood, and she also practices at the Institute for Sex Therapy. Well, that's what we're talking about, sexual fantasies, what they mean, how they can help, how we can be open, and when they can hurt. But you're listening. We'll be back after a short break. You're listening to Voices in the Family. That's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Penn supports WHYY. Doctors at Penn's Depression Research Unit are providing evaluations to determine if you are suffering from depression. Symptoms may include mood swings, irritability, sleep disturbance, and lack of interest. Those who qualify may receive an initial examination and treatment with an investigational antidepressant for 3 to 12 months. For information, the DRU number at Penn is 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462. Are you concerned about a loved one who is using drugs or drinking too much? You may be eligible to participate in research conducted by the Treatment Research Institute. As part of the study, you'll be asked to attend up to 14 sessions with a family trainer and will be compensated for completing questionnaires on a weekly and monthly basis. For details, 877-I-WORRY-2, 877-496-7792. The Family Training Program supports WHYY.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. We are talking about sexual fantasies, what they mean, where they come from, how we can use them to help relationships, and how they can sometimes be intrusive and frightening. My guests are Dr. Sabita Pillai-Friedman. She works as a psychotherapist at the Council for Relationships in Wynwood, Pennsylvania. Wendy Maltz joins us on the phone. She's a sex therapist, written several books, among them Private Thoughts. I want to talk with you, Sabita, about relationships and sexual fantasies. should they always be talked about? How do we know when? How do we begin that process?
Well, there are certain fantasies that can be your own private thoughts, and you do not have to share it in a relationship. But sharing sexual fantasies can be a great way to enhance your sexuality. In the early part of the dating relationship, there's a lot of novelty and mystery that enhances and keeps the sexual desire going. But as we are married for 10, 20 years, like you and I are, and we are constantly distracted by children's issues, financial issues, work transitions, we can be distracted all the time, and our distractions can then go to bed with us, which can really prevent us from acting our sexual feelings effectively. So I suggest to couples that they can use sexual fantasies to block out the cognitive distractions, the distractions that needs to be left outside the bedroom. And sexual fantasies can also be used to expand their sexual repertoire, to come up with new creative ideas, new sex acts that can really enhance their sexuality. So there are many, many ways you can use sexual fantasies to enhance your sexual connection and to maintain the erotic mood in the relationship.
So that begs the obvious question, and I'll turn to you, Wendy. What if one wants to expand and the other doesn't? What if one wants to share their fantasies and the other doesn't?
Well, I think it's good to test the waters and maybe talk in general a bit about the whole subject before actually doing some sharing, and then just make sure you're talking about the same thing. Some people think that to share sexual fantasies means to make a request to do a strange sexual behavior, you know. But if people are just talking about, well, what kinds of things do you fantasize about, I think, you know, or let's talk about them and realize that we don't have to take them literally. Let's look for things like sensory cues. Let's say you have a partner who tells you that your wife tells you she fantasizes about sounds, music, or whispers in her ear, you know, whispering in her ear, sexy language. That could be a clue that your wife has a more auditory kind of excitement that goes with her sexuality. So even though you might not want to, you can take something from that that can benefit your sexual experience with each other. If you then say, "Whoa, you know, is there something I can learn here, or would you like me to talk more during sex?"
And in order for me or the other partner to be able to learn, my anxiety and insecurity has to be under control, because nothing turns off one's ability to hear more than anxiety. Sabita, what's your experience with couples and sharing fantasies?
Well, you know, my first job as a sex therapist is to, first of all, figure out what the relationship is like. Because if there's not enough trust, there's not enough safety, not enough communication skills within the relationship, then it is really hard to go to sexual fantasies. So I first work on the relationship issues and, you know, help them develop a good, trusting, safe relationship and enhance your communication, and then go on to sexual fantasies.
Makes sense. Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Eileen on the line.
Hi. I wanted to ask your callers, or your guests, rather, if they could comment on the age of the Internet and the accessibility of porn in the privacy of our homes, and how that might snowball sort of into soliciting sex online from strangers, and then having meetings with those people, and then continuing relationships even while the person is married.
Yeah, there's a question inside of that too that comes up very often for me and my work, and that is, if your partner is visiting porn sites on the Internet, at what point is it a violation of vows or of implicit vows? At what point is it infidelity? Let's hear what my guests have to say. Wendy, what are your thoughts?
Well, I've done a lot of research in this area, and most women see the interactions with internet porn as an act of infidelity, because it is directing sexual energy away from her and away from the relationship and into some images of someone else. And so there's often a male-female kind of difference in how it's viewed.
Yeah, and the men might not see it that way.
Men might see it more as just like, oh, this is kind of fun and all guys do it, and it's a safe little outlet I have. So there's a lot of differences there. But I don't know about you, but I've never seen any studies that showed that it enhanced a sexual relationship if one partner...
Yes.
Was having an ongoing, steady sexual relationship with pornography.
Sabita, I how do you deal with it if one partner truly feels that what they're doing is innocent and the other partner feels violated?
Well, it depends on what level they're using porn. If it is to addictive proportions, then I do refer them to somebody who can really address sex addiction. And I would definitely, if the two partners can come together about it and talk about it and use porn selectively, there may not be a need for one partner to be heavily involved in porn.
One thing we know now, Eileen talked about the age of the internet. Today it seems pretty easy to turn a fantasy into a reality. It's just, you can just surf the web for a few minutes and there's your fantasy right in front of you. And I wonder what that does to one's fantasy life. Does it diminish the fantasy?
Yes. This is Wendy. I think it really does. I think that it's a sort of a hijacking of our own creative imaginations. We don't realize how much we are losing by being so heavily into commercial ideas of sexual fantasy. Sexual fantasy covers a huge range, from a fleeting image like a flower opening up or riding a horse up a hill. It can be something like that, as well as to very specific kind of scenarios that play out like a movie scene. So there's a wide range in there. They reflect our own interests, and they can reflect our own interests and our own feelings, and we're losing the ability to use our own creative imaginations, and so we're sort of being dulled because we get some very strong and powerful ones that are commercially driven, and then these other ones that we might more spontaneously come up with on our own, we're less likely to put the time and energy to learn how to do that and to create our own.
Let's see if we can squeeze another call in. We've got Jason on the line.
Hello.
Yes. Jason?
Hello?
Yeah, you've got bad background noise. Could you?
Is this any better?
Yeah. Could you make your question brief? Because we're having trouble hearing you.
Sure thing. As a man, I've always felt disconnected with other men in that my personal fantasies and preferences have always been more towards romance and relationships. And I'm a heterosexual man in a very happy relationship, yet other men have always tended more towards modern pornography.
Well, I don't know. According to my guess, you are probably right, and I'm not sure being disconnected is necessarily a bad thing. Being disconnected is just being disconnected. Sabita, any thoughts?
You probably are having a very good relationship with your sexual partner. If you're a heterosexual male and you enjoy fantasies and you enjoy romance and relationship, you probably have a very good erotic connection with your partner. Isn't that the most important thing?
The thing that strikes me about pornography, I mean, both of you have said many things about it, but when you are watching, when you are a party to one person being humiliated or ignored or dehumanized, that's not good. It's not good for you personally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not good for your own humanity. It hurts something inside of you.
And actually, you know, what's interesting about the caller's remarks are that, you know, it sounds like he's feeling a little bad about himself, that he has romantic and relationship-based fantasies, whereas I'll tell you, most of the 99% of the single heterosexual women that I talk to would give their eyes, teeth to meet a guy like that.
Yes.
They don't want guys whose heads are swimming with porn. They want guys who know how to connect sexually from their hearts and who care about relationship dynamics and care about romance.
One woman told me that what many women really want is to see a man without his mask. And that gets to kind of what Jason was talking about.
Yes.
Listen, unfortunately, we're out of time. I do appreciate both of you joining us, and it was really an interesting and informative discussion.
Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy.
Mm-hmm, thank you.
My guests have been Wendy Maltz and Sabita Pillai Friedman. Maltz is a sex therapist and marriage therapist. She's also the author of Private Thoughts. Pillai Friedman is a psychotherapist at the Council for Relationships in Wynwood. She practices at the Institute for Sex Therapy. Well, if you want any information about my upcoming lectures, my website is drdangottlieb.com. The engineer for today's show has been Al Banks. Christine Dempsey is our executive producer. Elisa Walters is our producer. Voices in the Family is produced by Mike and Scott. I'm Dan Gottlieb. Enjoy your week, my friends.
And we always enjoy listening to Dr. Dan Gottlieb every Monday here on WHYY FM Philadelphia. Good afternoon. I'm Robin Bloom with you. It's just a couple minutes before 1 o'clock, and we're going to go on to Here and Now day to day very soon. But we do want to ask you to call in and show your support here for WHYY. We've extended our pledge drive just a little bit extra, and we do need your help for supporting programs like Voices in the Family that you just heard and all of the other programs on WHYY that you enjoy. Give us a call, 1-888-345-9499, 1-888-345-WHYY. You can also pledge online at WHYY.org. We can offer you for a pledge of $120 Dan Gottlieb's book, Letters to Sam. So do give us a call and get that. 1-888-345-WHYY or pledge online at WHYY.org. Thanks so much to everyone who helps to make WHYY's pledge drive a success.
Cloudy's